We'll do it live!
You are listening to the AMC Report with your host, Ryan Larson.
Joining me back on the program is Dr. Hamniel Reyes, author of The New Era. And today we're going to talk about economic inequality. There have been some recent events that all connect together, and we'll be speaking to that shortly. Doctor, welcome back to the show.
Oh, thank you for having me. I'm glad to be there.
I'd like to talk about economic inequality. We talk about the 99% and the 1%, and even within the 1%, there's a 1% of these oligarchs that rule over everyone. But recently, there have been some court decisions and recent events that all connect together to what you wrote about in your book. Can you speak to those and expand on this idea?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. In the past month, in May 2014, there were three conferences. The Bilderberg meeting in May in Denmark, the Inclusive Capitalism Conference in London, and the World Taxpayers Association Conference in Vancouver, Canada. Three conferences seem to be not connected, but they are really connected together, and I'll show you how they are connected. Tied to that, another Supreme Court ruling in April, and it was the Makachin versus Federal Election Commissions. Basically, the Supreme Court allowed individual donors to give money to as many political candidates, parties, and committees as they wish. So they can now spend about $6 million each.
Hooray, we're all Ukraine now.
Yeah, you see, it is all, you can see the Bilderberg meeting. Basically, as you know, it is top 120 or 150 people in the world. It's a think tank. It is secretive, and basically they discuss the issues that concern them globally. And it will be interesting to know about clearly who they are and how they work and what their purpose is. And the reason also I am interested in economic inequality, because economic inequality breeds economic instability, political instability, and social instability. And this is very, very dangerous. And if you look in the history of revolutions, they're all triggered by economic inequality. And that's what's happening in the world today. And that's what's driving the wealthy elite today to take some action. And I can show you a comparison between what happened in the 30s after the stock market crash and the depression, and what's happening today, exactly a mirror image from each other. And with economic inequality, with globalization that starts spreading in the world since the early 80s by President Reagan, and the technology development, it made economic inequality not limited to the United States, but became a global problem. And unfortunately, if you look in the past crisis, the main crisis, that's 1929 stock market crash and the depression that followed, and you look at the financial crisis in 2008, they were very, very similar. And they happened after the wealthy people reached, or economic inequality reached a peak. And always, if you look into the growth of income and equities for a country, you will see the collapse happens after these people reach a peak. And reaching a peak of control of the economy and the income within the country, it is just a sign that they have full control over the political system. And that's what should concern every one of us. These people wouldn't let go, knowing that everything will collapse. And this is not my words. if we go through the conferences, what's being said there, it's they're repeating what I said in my book, The New Era.
They collapse the economy on purpose so that they can monopolize industries. So certain industries flounder. The ones that get government favoritism overtake the ones that don't. And so they consolidate their wealth and they get even larger monopolies. We saw that back in the day, even after the antitrust, how U.S. Yes. Steel, et cetera, and the railroads all combined. And then in 2008, we saw the financial institutions, Citibank, Bank of America, et cetera, swallow up their competition, Merrill Lynch, Countrywide and so on. They all joined up with Bank of America. So it's intentional.
Absolutely. But the point is that, you know, the wealthy are so greedy and they keep sucking the wealth from the bottom. Of course, sharks wouldn't eat sharks on the top. They feed on little fish like us. And they keep sucking the wealth to the point where the middle class disappears, the whole system collapses. Because if you don't have the majority having money to spend, what happens? Nobody can spend and everything falls apart. But they do not care. Because as you said, they will benefit. Whether the economy getting worse or better, they are on the take one way or the other. And that's the problem.
They get corporate welfare and what they're sawing the branch they're sitting on.
Because
they're wiping out the money supplies so that it doesn't matter how hard you work or how great your idea is in your business. When there's not enough capital out there for people to buy your product, you're still going to go out of business.
Absolutely. And the way that it was dealt with and saved the United States economy and future in the 30s is the opposite of what has been done after the 2008 crisis. In the 30s came FDR and came with the New Deal. And the New Deal, basically the three R's, the relief of the poor and unemployed, recovery of the economy, and restoring the control over the financial sectors. He came with Glass-Steagall Act in 1933. With these three R's, he managed to create the wealthiest, the most prosperous middle class ever in the history of man. Look here in this case, in 2008 came Mr. Obama, and what did he do? He saved the people who caused the crisis. So people were going bankrupt, the 99% on their disclosure, housing disclosure, and losing their jobs in millions. And what he did, he gave them the money, he gave it to the banks that caused the crisis. And as you know, these top Wall Street banks are investing money for tax evaders, these wealthy elite who have their own money in tax havens, and they do not pay taxes like you and me, and just evaded 100%. They just pay nothing. And these people were saved. When Mr. Obama gave them the $4.1 trillion in what's called quantitative easing, he saved the banks, he saved the tax evaders, and they recovered all their losses. As a matter of fact, you see, they became more stronger than they were before the crisis. So the two big to fail banks today are much bigger and much higher risk than they were before the crisis.
I should point out, too, besides the zero interest loans, the Federal Reserve pumped in $16 trillion secretly to these same organizations. So we had Obama doing it on the face of it, but that was only a fraction of the money that actually was spent compared to the Federal Reserve. And they were not held accountable. Obama got some of the heat for it, but the Federal Reserve just put in $16 trillion. They were audited. We had the GAO audit, and no news. All the news said was a little mantra, too big to fail, too big to fail. We had to do something. They excused the entire event.
Absolutely. And, you know, Obama or his administration, it doesn't matter to them. because we don't fund their elections, period. We don't feed them.
Yeah, Goldman Sachs was the highest financier of both Obama and McCain last election.
Exactly. And it's just, it is, and that's why we really need, as people at the 90, we need a grassroots movement to uproot these corrupted politicians and bring people who really represent us in a democratic way. And that's what I propose in the New Era Clubs system. And I really encourage, number one, I really appreciate your work, Ryan, because you're an independent thinker and you do your homework and you're not getting money from the big boys. You look at other activists, I have been to through a few of them, tell you, you know, donate to us and your donation will be matched by somebody else who is going to pay exactly how much whatever you pay, he will double it. Who is that person? These are the big boys who are, these activists, whatever it, they are being bought by these big boys to silence them and distract us who are sincere trying to know. So I really appreciate
it. It's why they won't bring up certain issues, and it's why they won't say a lot of, you know, a lot of things we all know are true.
Absolutely. That is their job. Their job, instead of being sincere in connecting with us, they are talking about issue and ignoring the main issue that really would concern us, everyone.
Well, they're also usually unreachable. Like, I'll talk to whoever on Facebook, Skype, etc. But a lot of these alternative media people, they're too big for their britches and they get above everybody and they're unreachable. They don't want to talk because they don't want to have to defend their ideas. They don't want to have to engage with the public because then they'd have to defend some of the things they say and some of the things they won't say and get called out on their gatekeeping. I can engage with everybody. It's like the old Indian chiefs that went to Europe and came back, and they asked, how come the queen's got to live separate from everybody and have armed guards outside? Like, there's a reason they can't be with the public.
Absolutely. And you know, my experience with this book, my plan, and I was completely wrong, my plan in promoting this book and reaching the public was I'll ignore the mainstream media and go to alternative media and other activist groups. And that's when I discovered, unfortunately, these people are well bought, as exactly as the mainstream media. The only difference, they're hiding behind their activism and their alternative media and stuff like that. But the truth is, they are worse. I tried to reach so many of them, and it was very difficult. And there is no responses. And I at last I figured it out. That was some discovery for me after writing the book. Oh God, the whole world is bought, and that's a major problem. Let's look into after six years of the financial crisis here. Look at what happened to the wealthy. The wealthy got much, much wealthier. The top 400 people in the U.S. averaged $750 million each. The top 0.01% averaged $40 million each. Then you look at the poor. The poor didn't improve. They still have 46.8 million people live on food stamps in poverty. You have 1 in 5 children still live in poverty in the United States, supposedly the wealthiest country in the world. Look at the new laws since the economic crisis. More oppressive laws, surveillance, as you know, it's all over the place, NSA, and watching every word we say and every email we send. And it tells you where the governments are going. And if you look at the big picture, why they are doing this? Because they are told the more the wealth is sucked from up the food chain, the more fear the elite on the top afraid of what is coming. It is nothing new. If you look in the history, every revolution preceded with that, and that's why the NDA came in play and the surveillance and watching everybody, not terrorists, not whatever. It is everyone is watched, whether you're American or not American. It doesn't matter.
Hey, so they're not looking for terrorists. They're looking for political dissidents.
Absolutely. And that's the same thing. As we know, the income is decreasing, that too big to fail banks became bigger. These are some of the work I brought from the conference, the inequality, the inclusive capitalism, which will come to it. There are still the big banks, the too big to fail banks. They are still getting subsidy from the poor taxpayers, $70 billion a year, just because they are too big to fail.
Yeah, too big to jail, I say.
Exactly. And the stock market is still rigged. As a matter of fact, the stock market today is more manipulated than it was before the crisis.
Yeah.
So it is the same business, the same way it was run. These people never stop of hungry for money until the whole building collapsed.
You hit the nail on the head there with the stock market, because one of my pet peeves is how people will judge how well a nation is doing based on the stock market. They'll look at the Dow Jones or whatever, and they go, oh, it's up or down, and they feel good if there's that green arrow or not. But that is not a measure of the country's wealth or well-being whatsoever. It doesn't look at the bottom. It doesn't look at the middle. It's just looking at people who own stocks, which are definitely a minority, and it doesn't show you how well the economy is doing, because you don't have unemployment rates, you don't have inflation, you don't have consumer price index. I mean, a good example is Nigeria. You see all the violence there. Now, on paper, if you look at stocks, they are still trading $140 billion in oil every year. Just in oil, $140 billion.
Who's buying it and where the money is going?
Well, it's going to Western companies and it's going abroad. But people in Nigeria, a lot of them don't have electricity. A lot of them are looking for clean water. On average, they're living on less than $2 a day. And now, people wonder why they're kidnapping and violence and all that. Boko Haram gets all this focus, but they're more scared of the actual military than they are of Boko Haram, which is financed by Saudi Arabia anyway. And then above that is the government itself. That's who's looting all the money away. But if you look on paper, you go, oh, that's a rich country. Look at all the oil they have. We're like, they don't have it. Yes. A couple oligarchs have all of it. They have almost nothing.
Absolutely. And most of this money that Nigeria makes goes to tax havens. That's the problem. And it is a few, as you said, it's a few people that benefit from the oil, but the rest of the country is hungry, is starving. And that's, look at the United States today, after in this year, you have 16,000 people in the United States. Their wealth, their net worth combined is $6 trillion. That's more than two-thirds of the population in the United States. And we're talking here about their net worth, we know. But I bet you the $6 trillion, there is another maybe $12 trillion we don't know about them, hidden in tax havens. And when I say hidden in tax havens, it's not somewhere in an isolated island. It is in Wall Street banks. The top 50 banks in the world are the people who handle that money. What a wealthy person would take that, what made that, made his $300-400 million this year, take them to tax haven, and they bring him back as unknown foreign money, has no name on it. Mm-hmm. And that's how a tax haven is not, it is among us. It is the major banks we have in that were saved by Mr. Obama.
So well, the it top is, 87 wealthiest people in the world have more wealth than the bottom 3.5 billion.
Absolutely. And that's what is now, as I said, when we went to global, now the problem became global. And that's very, very serious. If you look at The wealthy elite are very concerned of what's happening. As I said, they face this problem that in the 30s and exactly doing the same thing today. Exactly the same story. And I love linking the story to history together because it really shows you the picture as it is and you can predict what's going to happen. They realize that people are disgruntled with the government, with the corporation, with multinational corporation, with the financial system. You can't trust the financial. You used to say banks are not trustworthy. They can rip you off your money as they could.
Yeah, they were engaged in fraud. They were bribing rating agencies to give AAA ratings to absolute junk CDOs, and they should be in jail.
Exactly. So this is a major problem, and they identified it as a problem, and that's something that they have to do something about it. Even it is just kind of window dressing. That's what they did before, and that's what they're doing today. We need to take action, and the system, and I'll show you later that they are planning for what can we do to take advantage of these people without getting them revolt.
I think they got worried, especially after the revolution in Iceland, where yes, they just said, we're not paying this erroneous debt. They physically went into parliament and took the furniture out and threw it out the windows and took over the government. That should have been headline news, and nope.
No, it is. This is dangerous for them to portray it. You know, Egypt, the Arab Spring, which again was caused by the financial crisis and inequality. Arab Spring came the revolution in Egypt, and just it was mirrored here by Occupy Wall Street, and that's what really scared the wealthy elite. They got scared and they thought it will develop into that, into a revolution. But luckily, they managed to kind of abort it. You know, as we said, it is really, this inequality didn't happen by chance. It is government policies that created these people. And I give you an example of Bill Gates. Bill Gates is doing everything in his power to decrease his fortune. He stopped working for a living. He sold most of his stake in Microsoft. He poured $28 billion so far into his family foundation. And despite all that, Gates' pile keeps getting higher. His wealth today in April this year, totaled $79 billion. That's up $16 billion in just 2 years. And that shows you that it is by design. The guy is trying to get rid of his money, but he couldn't because it keeps the system designed for the wealthy to get wealthier. So what allows him to stay wealthy this in spite of himself? It is human design. It's an institution is designed and the practices from tax system to patent law that enable this wealthy to make money easily without even their against their wealth. So the question is whether we can reduce inequality or whether we want to. And if the answer is yes, there is something we can do. And that's it wouldn't happen by these wealthy sitting up there in these conferences and thinking, what can we help these poor people with?
Well, mentioning Bill Gates, you've got Microsoft and Apple too, using basically slaves in China to make some of their products.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's what I'm saying, is that this wealthy elite is an even much lower quality than happened in the United States through the Industrial Revolution. These people are predators and speculators. They didn't money. They made their money out of preying on the poor. Look at this guy in Apple. And just an example. He, in the first year, he got $378 million as a chair, $380 million. And this guy, look at what he's manufacturing. He's selling gadgets manufactured in China. He even took the jobs from the Americans, sent it to China to lower, and he's using labor, slave labor, as you said, people sitting in camps within the plant, and they're getting $17 a day. $17 for 16 hours.
With suicide nets on the factories.
It is shameful. But that's the system designed this way. In the United States, they if you look at the game, it is really, it was simple, but it was and easy. What they did, they took two things and made them the two sacred cows in the United States, democracy and capitalism. And in democracy, they turned into oligarchy, and all democracy today you have in the States or any other developed country is basically the wealthy elite fund the election campaigns by the elected politician. Then the politicians turn around and they create the legal and the economic environment and institutions for their backers to rip off your liberties, freedom, and wealth.
Well, I'll call them elitists, but I don't call them elite because there's nothing superior about them. I mean, it's not that hard to counterfeit money and steal from people.
Yeah, I call them the wealthy elite or elite. Yeah, wealthy elite is basically, it's not elite, doesn't mean it's better than you or me. Yeah. As a matter of fact, I don't have much respect for wealthy people who prey on others to make money. And that's what capitalism turned into, the second sacred cow. Capitalism became an art of preying on those who are poorer than us.
Yeah, it's not even capitalism because they're getting government favoritism. I mean, corporate welfare is state control of industry. I mean, there's it's socialism for the rich is what it is, crony capitalism.
But we still, everybody you talk to in the general, in the public, you talk to them, say, we're a capitalist country, and we're defending capitalism. What capitalism? It is predatory system where the wealthy take advantage of the poor and suck the last dollar in their pockets. Is that capitalism? God save us then.
Yeah. It is. Well, that's what they call it, but it's always just it's government. I mean, you have the same, it doesn't matter if you have a dictatorship or democracy or whatever. You always end up with plutocrats and the wealthy taking money from everyone else through the use of force from the government. It doesn't matter how you elect the government. They still behave the same way.
Yeah, but if you have real free election, that you elected these people really without getting bought before they win, when do they work for you, the system wouldn't work this way. And that's what happened in the 30s when FDR managed to set up the new system and controlled the corporation and the financial system. What happened? Their wealth went down from the 1% wealth down from 23% of the wealth down to 8%, 9% in the late 70s. So when you do that, you have power. You create, you distribute the wealth in a fair way. But when we call it like Egypt was called democracy. Okay, they have government, they have political system and parties and everything. But that's how do we mislead the people into believing that's democracy? That's what's happening.
Yeah, well, I mean, Nazi Germany was a democracy. Israel's a democracy. It doesn't turn out too well half the time.
No, it is not. And you can't call this system like when you have discrimination against your people and putting them in classes, you can't call it democracy.
They call themselves democratic.
Oh, absolutely. But that's the propaganda. That's a PR. That's the purpose of... When I take a very corrupted system and I call it a nice word and make people sell that word rather than the system, we succeeded to control the people. And that's what's happening in the developed world, at least the United States.
You mentioned earlier the averages of millionaires, and another fact to point out is 48% of Congress are all millionaires. Yes. And only 1% of the country, but half the Congress. And a lot of them are multimillionaires. They're making tens of millions or even hundreds of millions of dollars as congressmen and senators.
And these are the wealthy, as I said, it is, we've turned from oligarchy into plutocracy, where the guys who are ruling us are the wealthy, not their agents. Mm-hmm. And I bet you that most of the people in the Congress have, the people who've been there, careerist politicians, have their own accounts in tax havens. And that's why tax haven wouldn't be eradicated from the top down, never.
Of course not, yeah.
It wouldn't happen unless we have a real system with a grassroots movement that elect real representative of us, from us. And that's the only way. Like, if you look in their approach, it's really, it was clear, it was easy. Like, when I was preparing this book, I say, God, if everything is there. It is evident. You read the history. It is, everything is explained to you simply. And I say, why are people so kind of turned away from these facts? It's facts. It's history facts that's evidently being used and accepting that. When I hear people on the internet or any YouTube or any activist groups talking about, we're capitalists, you're poor, you can't even make a living yourself. And what capitalism is that? It just amazes me. So what they did is, they have a systematic program. Globalization was their best effort. Mr. Reagan is a hero of these people and a hero of the Chinese people, because he helped take their factories from United States. United States was like 61% in manufacturing sector. Today it's 11%. And the rest is gone to China. With their patents, they helped move China leaps and bounds in a very short period of time, because they took everything, gave them easy to the Chinese for a sake of a dollar.
And within that 11%, it's probably less than that, because a lot of the things that are stamped made in the USA are just made in the Marianan Islands or some kind of unincorporated territory, not part of the continental US, with the same system as they're doing to China, Indonesia, etc., with the offshore slavery.
Yes, maybe it is because the company is American, means that, you know, it's manufactured by Apple. Globalization was a good way to suck the wealth from the developed world, Europe and the United States and North America. Deregulation of the financial markets helped for these thieves to steal the money and ruin the financial markets.
It was McCain-Feingold that overturned Glass-Steagall.
Yeah, absolutely. And when they try to re-regulate it, they get a very watered-down new regulations that wouldn't work. Why would you have to reinvent the wheel if you have Glass-Steagall and it worked? There's no reason. Just bring the same text, put it back. No sweat. But yeah. The new law is enabled by the financial sector to find their own loopholes, and they will continue screwing the whole country, the whole world.
And create moral hazard. I mean, they have the investment banks taking on the loans or the mortgages in this case from the lending institutions, and remove risk from the equation. So they say, well, it's not ours anymore. The mortgage payments are going to this other entity now. So we'll go ahead and sell as many subprime mortgages as possible, because if they paid it or didn't pay it, it didn't matter to them. It's like you remove risk from the equation. So, of course, they were as risky as they could be. They didn't care.
Exactly.
And that was all because they got rid of Glass-Steagall.
Yeah, and derivatives. Derivatives is the most disastrous product ever created, and they are still trading it. Banks, and they're allowed in the new law that they can trade for a specific hedge,
and the structure is like investment vehicles. I went over this in my book, The Separation of Business and State.
Yes,
in the banking chapters. You remind me, I'm going to send you that. But yeah, I mean, that's all going on. But let's talk more about the solutions now, the new era clubs, starting locally. And I know people want a quick answer that, you know, something we could do in a day, but that's just not reality, folks. And we've got to put the work in, and we've got to start locally. But speak to that some.
Yeah, you see, it is, as I said, there is no way for us to restore our democracy and the equitable economy. There are two ways. One way is revolution, and I am against that because you can see it from far away. Every country a revolution, it destroys the country for generations to come. The other solution is democracy. And the only democratic way is that we establish, every locality establish their own New Era community clubs. We have a website for them. It's called the neweraclubs.com. And they can establish their own community club. And if they can reach 22%, one-fifth of the eligible voters in one club, they can elect the person they want, even if he doesn't have a dollar to spend on elections. Because with getting 22%, statistically, as I did the work, it is, you can determine who will win. And if you do that, you can send a clean person with a clean slate to the legislature that work for you. And you can, and I, if you look into the process, what I do in every club will set up their own platform, which suits their objective of the community, not the party, not the politician. It is the it's owned by the community, owned by the club.
And this is far, far more constructive than walking around the park with signs. I mean, get organized and pick someone among you to run.
Exactly. And if there is one, like when, if there is some people running for election today, you can take them within the club, interview them. And I don't mean writing the platform he has to adopt, or he or she has to adopt the platform of the club. If he adopts it, you examine their qualification. Is this person qualified? As I said in my presentation, it is, if you are applying for any low-level job, engineering job in the government or accounting or whatever job, you have to present your qualifications. But if you're running for election, all you have to be is still breathing. If you're still breathing, you can run for any position. And how could we have a guy leading the country and without having any previous experience that he can show off for? It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense we screen the typist or the assistant and don't screen the top position, which control everything in the country.
It's so weird. We would never elect people in NASA or something, or any job where you're actually going to do something that matters. You're not going to vote for who builds the bridge. You're not going to vote for any other kind of occupation. You have to have qualifications and education, school. But when it comes to running the world, anybody can be voted in, regardless of who they are or what they know. It's amazing.
That's a democracy. Like, you look, take any politician. Without, very rarely, you will find people who are rarely qualified. The majority of them, if you take them out of the legislature on their own, with their experience, with their own skills and the qualifications, they might not be able to find an assistant job for anyone of the senators or representatives. It is, and that's the sad case. But again, we go back, it is democracy. So we put the title democracy, and underneath it, we put anything we want that fit our purposes and say, that's democracy. So anyways, in this system, we examine, evaluate them, elect, vote for them internally within the club. And after we vote for them, the person who wins the most of the vote within the club becomes our representative that we will vote publicly, will give them our block vote. If we do that, we control, we the people control the political system. That you can proudly say, this person in the legislature represents me, because you are the person who brought him in. And that person will be working for you as your servant, public servant, not your master. These people, when they get elected, become our master. No, when he get elected, he has to come to you, report to you in a town hall meeting once a month to tell you what he's been doing and what he's going to do and to get your input in it. not just his opinion. We don't need the people. That person becomes our delegate that represents us, not our spokesperson or our representative. So it is a very powerful system. I really, really believe in it. And I hope everyone examine it. And if you feel there is this is the best system you can work with that can help you achieve your goals, please join. And the more people, and if the politicians see that this process is serious, I assure you, they will come running to it because they feel the risk of losing their jobs. So it is, and it will be self-profit process. Like as soon as it's accepted, succeeded in one club, the whole developed world will adopt it. So it is really, I hope we all try it, and I put 3-4 years of my life in developing, writing this book and preparing the system, and I hope it works for all of us, because I know confidently it will work if we can have enough people joining the club.
We need 2 or 3 more Ron Pauls. I mean, you can see what happens when there's just even one honest politician there to
yes.
tattle on the rest of them, what they've been doing, you know.
But
and
what did
we
they
could
do
have
for
a
him?
Lot more. I mean,
yeah,
he happened to get elected because the person in his district was dropping out mid-race, got sick or died or something, I don't forget. But once he got in there, he got reelected over and over again because he was honest. But
yes.
had it been a normal process, he probably wouldn't have been voted in. But see,
well, absolutely.
Now we have the internet, and there are ways for us to organize and get around the mass media and get around other, because normally, if someone isn't pro-war and you know, just toting the party line, you'll never hear of them. They'll never be on TV. They won't be
absolutely.
Allowed in the debates. They won't be allowed anything. But we could have our own debates and
exactly.
exclude them. Just quit watching the presidential debates and watch the debates that we host ourselves, you know, third parties.
Exactly. And you know, if the community prepared its own platform, you really don't need a party. Because the party becomes redundant.
Yeah.
We're looking for our, there is common platform that applies to all of us. And the purpose of it is to fund elections from the public purse. And if you look into my book, we fund the election hundreds of times. What is really spent? Because when the corporation donate $100,000 or whatever amount of money, they get it hundreds of times back from the public purse. So why don't we save ourselves the trouble? And if we have the new era community clubs, we wouldn't need money, because everything will be decided locally, and the people will be able to represent us at all levels. And the other thing that I am really keen on is 2 terms. And this was mentioned in the U.S. Constitution several times, the
term limits.
Term limits is 2 terms, and it was written in the Constitution in Pennsylvania, I believe. And in doing so, you know, you get a very passionate person about serving, and after they complete their service, they go back home and they don't try to interfere or lobby anything. And in this new system, there is no lobbying. If you are working with the corporation or any groups want to lobby, they come to the party, to the club and talk about the issues, and in the open, no money exchanged, no favors exchanged.
Yeah, lobbying, not with ideas, but lobbying with money is just legalized bribery.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's really, it is clear. And the funny thing, if you look in the history of the United States, it was a accepted bribery. But
yeah.
Then it banned, then it came back in a different ways, perks and, you know, different indirect gifts. That's, again, it's bribery. And, you know, you have seen cases about people who are being caught. But in banning lobbying, you're really creating a healthy system for us all. Because if the cause, notice something, corporations are always competing against our interests. what helps us is wouldn't help them. And that's what they we are in a conflict, but they have the upper hand. They have the money, they have the media, and they have the message. And they buy the politicians. So they control us 100%. That's why we, you know, you see people who take dishonest approaches reach the top. And people who resist and follow their conscience usually don't get anywhere. But it is it goes back to the person. So it is what I'm saying is this system is pure, is good for every one of us. And even if we can't reach the 22%, we will be able to scare them more than Occupy Wall Street did.
Just because getting one person in there to issue a bill against, say, the TSA or the NSA would force the rest of them to have to vote on it. Yes. A lot of them say, oh, yeah, we're against that because some 90% of the public is. But then why don't they vote them out? Well, you know, vote it down. And the reason is they don't want to hold a vote because then they'd be forced to show their hands that they're yes. not really against it, that they support it because they've been paid to. Yes. But you get one honest person in to draft the bill, and then if it can get out of committee, you can see how they're really going to vote. And if it doesn't get out of committee, you say, why is it not getting out of committee? And you can put the heat on the committee members. But we can't even get that far ever since Dr. Paul left. There's nobody in the Senate. And there's really nobody in the whole Congress honest enough to represent the people, even on issues where over 90% agree on something, like getting rid of the TSA, ending the wars, and so on. Like, it's not going to happen. So we've got to organize and get just even one or two in there.
Exactly.
And it'll snowball.
And the point is that if as soon as you establish the system, if the system works, it becomes a major threat to everybody because it works. If you prove it works, you notice a lot of people, free thinkers, tried and put their money and tried to run, but they all fought by all these people and they lost. You know, Perot came very independent and spent billions of dollars of his own money and he disappeared. Same thing with the Rampal. It is the way the system works. If it is grassroots movement, nobody can stop it.
Mm-hmm. Perot did walk away with 20%, and then after that, they would not allow any third parties to debate. They blocked Buchanan, they blocked Ralph Nader, they would have blocked Paul, so he tried to run as a Republican, and they couldn't get out of the primaries, and there's a lot of shenanigans there.
And what happened to him? He was, again, in the media, I mentioned in the book how he was treated very unfairly.
Oh, they demonized him. They were calling him a racist. I mean, they used anything they could to discredit that man. And
yeah, they don't his participation in the debates. He was having less time, mm-hmm. exposure to the media, have much less time than the rest of the candidates.
Kucinich too, because they're both anti-war.
Yeah. Anything that again is the power triad is gonna anybody or any group try to face them will lose because they have, as I said, they have the money, the power, the message. And on the politicians. And
I like to pressure the League of Women Voters to host new debates only for third parties and exclude the Democrats and Republicans. Wouldn't that be something?
It would be amazing. But the point is that the only way is build from the small community. If it is election, local election or state election or federal election, but we start with a small community and from this, we grow, and the growth within the internet becomes so easy. It is just proof that the system works, and that's all we need to do. And so I encourage your the audience to visit thenewera clubs.com and join. And as I said, you are a good source of education, Ryan. You know, that system that can't work without you because people get educated, understand the issues, then take action. And
I'll tell you something. That's why I go with anti-neocons because
yes.
I hate labels because they get hijacked. We say, well, what would the party be? Like, you got to stay away from labels because people can hijack a name. So it doesn't matter if it's libertarian or anarcho-capitalist or
absolutely.
Progressives or whatever. It's really not what they are. It's more about what they are not. It's exactly. Like, well, we're not the establishment. We're not Republicans and Democrats. And that's why I think it sounds odd, but actually the anti-label has more uniformity than any specific label, because I'm not narrowing it down and say, well, you have to be exactly like this. As being anti-neocon is saying, well, at least we know what you're not for. And that's, you know, no more wars, no more bailouts, no more spying with the NSA, et cetera. And then the other specific things on certain taxes, social programs and stuff, there can be some disagreement, but we have to have unity against the forces controlling us, which right now are I just call them Republicrats, because it's really one party, and that is the Pentagon's party. And that's why I use anti-neocon, and people say, why do you have anti? It sounds negative. And I'm like, it sounds negative, but it's not. It's actually much more positive than trying to grab a label.
You know, anti-neocon, it's really very powerful for one reason. You find the neocons in every crisis we have in the world, whether it is financial, whether it is military, whether it is geopolitical, they are there in every place. Mm-hmm. And so picking the neocon is really more inclusive. It is good. It's nothing wrong with it. Like I find it more expressive of what you can do, because that's the people really standing in the way of us to have a better life.
They're starting these wars, and I mean, everyone knows about the Iraq war, but Ukraine again. Everywhere McCain goes, I mean, he's one of the worst ones. There's violence.
Absolutely.
They hijacked the Egyptian revolution. Finally, there's Syria. There's
they
Ukraine.
Back anybody that helped them achieve their goals. Mm-hmm. The Al-Qaeda was their enemy, was their friend from the beginning, then became their enemy, they're now their friend.
Yeah.
In Syria and Egypt and everywhere. And in Libya. It is just, they don't care who they deal with. All they care how we can achieve our objectives. Control the money, control the power in the world.
Yes, and that's, the CIA will partner with whoever is the biggest drug cartel in the area.
Yes, and I will give you a chance to maybe we can talk again about the rest of the, because I would like maybe sometime we talk about inclusive capitalism, because it's really, really important story, maybe next time or something. And it was basically, I'll tell you just two sentences about it. It was it's created in 2012. And the first meeting was 2014 in May last month, but it was co-chaired by the lady Lynn Forrester de Rothschild, mm-hmm. and the CEO, the director of Global of McKinsey and the company, the wealthiest, as you know, CEO of Rothschild, the wealthiest person in the world. And that's who led the inclusive capitalism.
So that family goes way back in central banking. I think a lot of people know the Rothschilds and the Warburgs and so on. So that would be a nice topic for next time. So let's hold and save that for another program.
Wonderful.
Well, thanks for coming on. It's always good to talk to you. And I encourage people to get your book, The New Era, and to visit the website. And to get proactive, because no one's going to do it for you, folks. You have to do it
yourself. Yes, please. Yeah,
like Gandhi said, be the change you want to see in the world.
Absolutely. I appreciate that, and I'm really glad that we met today, and I thank you. I look forward to meeting you again, Ryan.
Well, I've got all that linked below if you're watching this on ANC Report, and if not, then click the link below if you're watching this on YouTube, and it will go to ANC Report, where I have the book and the clubs and the website and everything you need.
Wonderful.
Excellent. And there's less than 2 weeks left on the fund drive. We are over 61%, almost there. Please keep your donations coming. You will get the perks and goodies. The link is below. Join the campaign. You don't want to miss it. We want to have this JFK film. We want to create this network. This is what we're talking about. Let's do it together. Click the link below. $6, you get two ebooks. It's a deal.